Blog Talk Radio.
Up next, the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark.
Mark and Nate. Well, we are live on the Sports Offensive here. This is JP coming to you live from the Veranda High Point Apartment Complex. We had a bit of technical difficulties starting off the show here. The call got dropped. We're going to try to get my co-host, Mark Foray, back on the line here momentarily. Don't know what happened, but we do have Super Bowl 50 coming up right tomorrow at about 31. And then
all right, well, I can hear you now. I'm sorry about that. I'm not sure what's going on.
Hey, guys. All right.
Kind of booting me off the system.
Yeah, I'm
okay,
here
guys.
Now.
All right, so listen, we are live on the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. We are coming to you live from the Veranda High Point Apartment Complex in beautiful South Denver. I am the one, the only JP. On the phone with me is my always co-host, Mr. West Coast himself, Mark Fiore. Mark, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, you know, doing great. We're knee-deep in Bronco country. You know, the Super Bowl fever is high, and I think yesterday in the state, probably 90% of people at work were wearing a Bronco jersey. So, you know, everyone's ready, and let's just say everyone's hoping to avoid the same debacle that we saw 2 years ago.
That's right. And I want to apologize to everybody that tuned in right at 9 o'clock. We experienced some technical difficulties. The system actually went down on us. I do apologize about that. But I would like to welcome a special guest today. Joining us by phone, one of the South Dakota boys, Nate, D-O-G-G Dog. Nate, welcome to the Defensive.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about the show and to talk a little Broncos.
All right, Mark, let's get into it. In the preseason, when we did actually start this show, we both had the same two teams going to the Super Bowl. That was the Packers and the Colts. I did pick the Packers to win the Super Bowl. You did pick the Colts. You can look back on that now. And I, like we said, all season, our picks are subject to change any time. And they did, but jokingly, we look back at that, and wow, where did the Colts go wrong?
You know, I don't even understand what happened with the Colts. I'm still a little confused. I mean, I think we both knew the defense on the Colts was not good.
Right.
Andrew Luck obviously kind of matched that by making the offense so impressive the last few years, but maybe just injuries with him that we didn't know to start the year or whatnot, but what can I say? There's a lot of egg on my face on that pick.
Yeah, lacerated kidney will do that. Nate, what do you think?
Well, I think Andrew Luck was injured most of the year. You know, I think that was a big part of it. The offensive line play was just horrendous, along with the defense. And, you know, those three things, I think, led to their demise.
I think you have to wonder if that's going to be the theme for the entire year, for just for the NFL in general, that offensive lines have just kind of withered. And, you know, you see the one team that has a good offensive line, which is, you know, like the Panthers, and they did really well. Even though the line's not really an offensive line for passing so much, but for running the ball, they're like the only one I can think of that really opens up holes.
500 points. That says it all right there. Leads the NFL.
And, you know, you got to consider that when the season started, you remember that the Panthers lost, I think it was Benjamin, right, that went down. And he was like the only receiver they have that anyone was impressed with. And
exactly.
Yet,
we wrote them off on this show.
Of course, they had no offense. How are they going to score points? I still don't know how they score points.
I think it's that vaunted running game, guys, that
yeah,
Jonathan Stewart has had a resurgence with D'Angelo Williams leaving and being the major ball carrier there. And, you know, obviously the offensive line play and then the young backs and the veteran Mike Tolbert toting the load at the goal line has been a force. And, you know, obviously Cam Newton has made some major improvements in the pocket. And, you know, along with Ted Ginn and Kotchery and the other receivers, they've really made some improvements throughout the season.
You got hit right on the head there. Jonathan Stewart had 989 rushing yards with 6 touchdowns on the years. He only had 2 fumbles lost. 242 attempts as a 4.1 average. So you hit it right on the head. He's just a hair shy, 11 yards shy of a 1,000-yard rusher. So that's pretty impressive by Jonathan Stewart coming in. Mark, what did you have to say about that?
Well, I was just going to mention that I think Nate hit the nail on the head, especially in terms of why Cam Newton is the MVP, and it shouldn't even be a close vote. I mean, it should be unanimous. You give any other quarterback that surrounding cast, that group, I don't think they win 8 games. I mean, I know the defense was good and the turnovers led to a lot of points, but really, can you think of any other quarterback who can do what he's done in terms of he can hit these receivers who are not that impressive because he's a good thrower, a good passer from the pocket now, but he is such a threat when he runs himself because he can run over almost anybody that they have to stack the box against him and he gets an open passing lane.
Yeah, I mean, only 2 names come to mind for me, Mark. That would be Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. You know, we saw with Tom Brady, he did struggle when his main weapons went down, and they did take some tough losses. And obviously Aaron Rodgers with, you know, losing Jordy Nelson at the beginning of the year, he did not have a lot of weapons and was still able to get the job done and lead his team to the playoffs. But you're exactly right. Those surrounding cast is not much to speak of. And Cam Newton certainly – you know, made everyone around him better and in an impressive fashion.
Yeah. That's the name Superman for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. At least his little celebration now kind of really has merit because, boy, I know a lot of people don't like it, but I think at this point you have to admit that he's one of the few scrambling quarterbacks that does it right. He's kind of like Russell Wilson, right? He scrambles because he's an amazing scrambler and a great runner, but that's not his first thought. That's his last thought. If I don't have anywhere to go, now I'll take
off. And that
which
he has
I think,
a cannon. Go ahead, Nate.
God, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that transformation really happened this year, Mark, with him being a pocket-first guy. You know, if you look back the last couple years, you know, it was he didn't do his checkdowns. If his primary receiver wasn't open, he was taken off. And I think he really saw that transformation this year with him able to do his checkdowns and think pass first. I mean, it was an incredible transformation.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, because the first 9 games of this year, he had a 58.7 QBR, right? So, I mean, just terrible. He was doing nothing, wasn't scaring anybody in the pocket. The last 9 games, he's been 80.8 QBR. So, I mean, he's almost, I mean, not quite doubled, but, I mean, that's a massive increase in your ability in the pocket. And, you know, maybe that has kept defenses off kilter. But, you know, I know we wanted to go over a couple of things before we dove headfirst into the Super Bowl. Where'd you want to go first?
It's up to you, Mark. Start us off.
Well, why don't we roll right into, you know, this is kind of there was a lot of things on TV and in the sports world this week kind of surrounding negativity of sports in terms of just a number of things, especially including death. One of the big things that happened, of course, for the millennials and the Generation Xers was, you know, we were the first generation to see the X Games come around, and we unfortunately lost icon Dave Mira at the age of 41 this week.
Yeah, that one hit home with me. I mean, I remember Tony Hawk and Mira and pretty much like one of the first X Games. And Mira was just, I mean, he's the first guy to pull off a double backflip on dirt on a BMX bike, which is impressive in itself. I mean, he was an innovator in the sport. I mean, he put the sport on the map just like Nyquist did, Hoffman, the Condor did, you know, guys that are all up there at our age, way back in the day,
right,
back in 93 and everything like that.
And you got to think, if we didn't have those players, if those guys didn't go up there and really make the kind of X events into events that people got interested in, the genre never really was taken off. So, I mean, him and Tony Hawk and some of those other early pioneers, I mean, the X Games and even extreme sports in general really owe a lot to him.
Yeah, and up to 2013, Dave Mara still owned the record for most X Games gold medals. And he actually medaled every year from 1995 to 2008, but he held the most gold medals up to the year 2013 until that record got beat. So, you know, it's troubling. It was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. I've been hearing rumors of people talking about the head injuries. He got into really bad. He got hit by a drunk driver when he was a teenager in a car. Never thought he would really recover to ever be a professional athlete or an action sports athlete like he was. He's taken many, many head blows on stunts that have gone wrong in practice and in competition. CTE has become now a talk of the concussion factor of, you know, this guy had everything going for him. He has a beautiful wife, two great children. And, you know, you have to wonder what was going through his mind. So, you know, our heart goes out to the Mara family right now and the whole action sports community. So, you know, and that brings me to another point. You know, I called it last night, the 30 for 30, on the 1985 Chicago Bears. And, God, what a great team that was. They were a bunch of characters.
Yeah, I saw that show myself. I thought it was great. But, boy, it was depressing. You know, you talk about the head injuries to Mira, and we're seeing more and more of that with the NFL now with the CTE, which, for those who don't know, it stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And it just basically means repeated concussions or trauma to the brain. And over time, it kind of creates a web of interfering material, and the brain no longer works right. And as we're going to kind of go into this, one of the really wild things or really kind of disturbing things is the amount of people who have committed suicide and later been found to have this problem, or even not even committed suicide, just found to have the problem in general. But the ones who have committed suicide seem to do it in a really harsh way, a really painful way. And you have to think that if you're in that much delusion or pain or whatever it is that's causing them to do this, to want to make it so painful of a way to die, you just got to think that this is all going to come to a head in the next 15 to 20 years, and you got to wonder if the NFL is going to become a different sport.
Yeah,
you make
a great point. I think the NFL needs to take this on head on. If they were smart, I mean, they need to start bringing in doctors, and I really think they need to start a program, you know, that helps the players after they retire. If they were proactive on this, I think that would make them look good. You know, it does raise the question for me, like, there's so many players that are going through this, but also how many players don't get it? So that question never seems to be asked, you know, from the NFL perspective, which I think is interesting. You know,
well, but how many players don't get it? Do we even know? I mean, even Brett Favre was talking about how he's having memory problems.
Yeah, it's definitely something that they need to dive head first into.
Right now, they can only determine if you have it after you have passed away. This one really hits home with me. I have 8 concussions and being seen by a neurologist currently. And, you know, I, quite frankly, I know I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago. And, you know, I'm on different medications to keep me in balance. And you know, it's one of those things where when I watch a lot, especially when I watch Jim McMahon talk, he has an actual GPS in his car because he forgets how to get home sometimes. I've been driving around where I forget. I'll stop in a parking lot, and I'll completely forget where I'm going. You know, so this it's one of those things that's really, really scary. And the NFL, the NHL – everyone needs to take this head on. Lacrosse needs to take this head on. Soccer needs to take this head on because you got people doing headers that are dropping, you know, getting different diseases and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think
right.
All the major sports. with you know, hockey being a major impact sport. You know, basketball and baseball maybe not so much, but even if you look at guys like Justin Morneau, who, you know, had major concussion problems and missed, you know, a good chunk of a year, year and a half, you know, you wonder about guys like that.
He missed two seasons almost with that concussion.
Yeah.
And it goes to show you that, you know, in baseball, when you've got to have that incredible time precision of hitting the bat with a ball, how badly a concussion really affects you. And I think in some other sport, maybe you don't notice it as much because, you know, in football, you know, if you're a lineman, either you're trying to push past the lineman in front of you or you're trying to block the lineman in front of you. And that is a big target. So maybe you can have a concussion, you cannot really be there, but you can still do your job. And maybe we just didn't notice how bad it has been for a lot of years. And, you know, we all love football, but, JP, when you bring up soccer, that's a really crazy thing when you think about it. A soccer ball is light. It's, you know, we all played soccer as kids. We all did headers. And to think that something that light and that seemingly innocuous can cause the concussion, the minute concussions that pile up over time, you know, all these sports are going to have to start investing money in clinical studies and research and, you know, try and find something to do. I do know in that 30 for 30 episode, Jim McMahon is getting some experimental treatments, and he noticed a huge difference in, like, the confusion factor and the muddled thinking when he got this injection. So, I mean, hopefully they're moving that direction. But, yeah, I mean, this is a much bigger problem than we ever thought.
Mark and Nate, let's pause the conversation right there. Mark, when you get up in the morning, I know that this morning you kind of got in the shower probably a little bit late. You're probably running around drinking some OJ. What do you do to get up and just get yourself going?
Well, you know, the best thing you can do for yourself is to have the right amount of nutrients and to have a good exercise plan. So one of the best things you can do is you can contact gkfit.net. They're a sponsor of our show. We love them. They can put you on to a great supplemental program in terms of shakes and meal replacement. And they can also get you on a great exercise program. Whether you're looking for a beach body, you want to make sure your legs are in shape for the ski season and hitting the moguls, whatever you're looking for, you can contact EK Fit on Facebook or you can go to www.ekfit.net and they'll help you achieve your goals.
That's right. We would also like to thank Sage Media for being one of our sponsors for websites, graphic design, social media, and much, much more. Sage Media will build and manage your company brand. In fact, they designed our Sports Offensive logo, and we love it. Contact Kyle over at SageMediaLLC.com. That's SageMediaLLC.com. You're listening to the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark and special guest host Nate. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to sell all your belongings and live in a commune.
These dungarees belong to all of us now, Tom.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman.
We need a new stuntman!
You just need FeedThePig.org. Don't get left behind. Get tips and tools at FeedThePig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Okay, forest animals. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Sports Offensive with JPM Mark. We are live on Blog Talk Radio, coming to you from the Veranda High Point Apartment Complex in beautiful South Denver. Mark, let's get back into the topic. We're talking about CTE right now. And let's just go over a list of some of the players. We want to get through our other stuff and have as much time as we can for their Super Bowl preview here. Why don't you start us off?
Well, one of the first ones, this man did not commit suicide, but he was a hero to a lot of people, including the sheriff who'll be playing tomorrow in the Super Bowl. Kenny Stabler died of cancer at the age of 69, and he was found to have CTE as well. And correct. When you really think about it, he's one of the lucky ones because he made it to age 69. And boy, the list of players who have who didn't die from natural causes, who killed themselves, boy, a lot of them didn't make it a long time after football.
No, they really, really didn't. I'm looking at the list here. Andre Waters, one of my Eagles, he was such a great safety, and I kind of know his personal story. When he got finished with the Eagles, he bounced around from coaching job to coaching job to coaching job, and he never really found himself. And then he was found dead at 44. He shot himself, and he was found to have it. So, it's really scary. Mark, why don't you go down the list for us here real quick?
Well, I was talking earlier about, the kind of the brutal way that they commit suicide, that it's not just a – not that there's any way to commit suicide that isn't brutal, but, Terry Long, an offensive lineman, dead at 45, drank antifreeze. I can't think of a more painful way to die than to drink a corrosive liquid that's going to melt your insides. You had Shane Dronin. He was a defensive lineman. Now, he basically threatened and came at his wife before he just shot himself instead. He died at 48. There's another three in a row now in the 40s. Ray Easterling, he made it to 62, but again, he shot himself. Junior Seau, we all remember that one because that's a player from our time. And yep. We remember him being on ESPN. He seemed fine, but you just don't know what's going on in someone's head. You don't know the pain they're going through. And he, like Dwayne Duerson, they both shot themselves in the chest. Now, shooting yourself in the chest seems like a much more painful way to go than your head because if you shoot yourself in the head, you're going to be dead right away. So again, they're not even thinking clearly when they commit suicide. And then we also
Mark, I'm going to stop you right there for a second. Do you know why they're shooting themselves in the chest now?
Is it to preserve their brain?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're preserving their brain so it can be studied. So
they're cognizant enough to know that they want to save their brains for research. So, I guess that's a positive and
scary
thought, right?
That's a scary thought.
That is a scary thought.
There's also that Jovan Belcher guy. I don't know him very well, but he's he died at 25. What he did was his mother-in-law was over at the house. He went nuts. He shot his girlfriend in front of the mother and then killed himself. And they both died. And then the last one we have on our list was Paul Oliver. He shot and killed himself. He died at 29. So, they're getting younger and younger, and I think that might be, we saw all those retirees on the 49ers last year, and maybe this is why. Maybe you guys are thinking it's not worth encephalopathy,
And Mark and Nate, there's a lot more people on this list that people don't know about. I actually know this list is very, very, very long. That people that have it, I can think of a bunch off the top of my head, but we're not going to go into that. So we're going to keep that conversation to that and say, the NFL is trying to do something about it. There's been a couple, there's a lot of rule changes that are making the game less violent that people don't like, but it needs to be done. And there's also been a lot of payouts to ex-players, settlements, and not going to court. The NFL does not want to go to court over this. If they go to court over this, they're in trouble. They're in a lot of trouble.
I would think their best interest is preserving their sport. So, diving headfirst into, getting to the bottom of what is causing this and, making sure that there's a program in place for these players that are going through it. Any kind of dementia or, any sort of symptoms that they're having after football, they need to be addressed. And I think
that
would definitely be in the NFL's best interest to, put a program in place along with the other major sports as well.
Let's jump in.
We're talking about mental problems. Let's go to Johnny Manziel.
I want to get into Johnny here. This is a train wreck. His dad said that doesn't think he's going to make it to his 24th birthday. without serious help, which is really just it's a shame. You know, Ryan Leaf last night was saying it's like looking in a mirror. We all know the troubles Ryan Leaf went through. And he said he's a big supporter. He's a big fan of Peyton Manning. He's like, I have nothing against the guy. He's like, I'm rooting for him. And I think Ryan Leaf really learned a life lesson, and he learned it sitting in a jail cell. And unfortunately, it looks like Johnny Manziel might be headed that direction. If he makes
it. Yeah, I mean, it's not a fun way to go, and it's not. I mean, do we even really know what happened to Ryan? Really know other than he just couldn't handle the pressures and the rigors of the spotlight in the NFL.
He did a bunch of different things. Off the top of my head, I can't think of everything. I just know that he did a bunch of different things, and it landed him for a short, brief stint in jail. But that's where he really said he gave in and said, I hit rock bottom.
Oh, I don't remember where he went to jail, and he did a lot of crazy stuff. I just don't know what it is that made him go that way. And you look at Johnny Manziel. I mean, the guy loves the spotlight. He's always loved the spotlight. And I think maybe he's not realizing that he's now hit a level where you have to be controlled or you just derail everything. And, I mean, if you can't make it in Cleveland where there's no talent and there's no expectations, where are you going to make it?
Yeah, well, guys, it's hard to believe the dumpster fire that is Johnny Manziel right now. It just seems like every weekend there's something new coming out about him. You know, I think another thing that the NFL needs to look into, now I know they do have kind of a mentor program in place for the rookies, but just think about all the different challenges that these young men face coming into the NFL. You know, a lot of them are men of color and come from, you know, harsh backgrounds, and all of a sudden they're given millions and millions of dollars. I mean, think how susceptible they are to people taking advantage of them, but also to have all this money all of a sudden and all the temptations that go along with it. You know, the partying scene, the women, you know, I know Mark and I have talked before about some of these guys that get DUIs. Like, it just blows me away that they have all this money. Why are they out driving? Why can't you hire somebody to take you home at the end of the night? You know, I think they really need to educate these young men on the dangers of sports and, you know, even outside of sports, obviously, you know, with the drinking and the women and all those things.
And, you know, wisdom is acquired through time, and that's unfortunate. We all know that. If we could all go back to our younger selves and we could say, oh, don't do that, you're going to regret that. Don't do that, that's going to not end up well in 20 years. You know, even just little things like health or things like that. But, you know, you bring up the money thing, right? And I think it's a really good parable. When you look at the student or the freshman college student who gets alcohol poisoning because their parents were very strict, never let them drink, were unrealistic about how, you know, life is, and then they get to college, they don't have any, you know, no one watching over their shoulder, and they can't stop themselves from binge drinking and alcohol poisoning and sometimes dying. And I think it's the exact same way when you take a poor person who's never experienced money, and like you said, now you've got millions of dollars, and you don't know how to handle it right. You don't know how to be responsible with it. Not everyone, of course, but a lot of people are not prepared for it. And when you talk about having like a mentoring program, I honestly think the best thing they could do is say, either one-third or one-half of your rookie contract goes into a trust that you can't get to for 5 or 10 years just to make sure they've got some money left over if their playing career is short or something bad happens or they lose all their money. You know, it would be kind of a safety net to train people. I know that probably would never happen, but I think that would be a good idea.
Absolutely. And, you know, I forget the exact number, but I think the average NFL career is something around 3 years. So, you know,
it's
best interest. It's in these guys' best interest to, you know, be putting the money away. And again, it's hard to know who to trust. You know, you do want to bring somebody in who can manage your money, you know, but, you know, with all these crazy things going on, the Madoff thing, and, you know, you just never know who's going to take advantage of you. So it's really important to look for reputable people and, you know, to help them through this. You know, that being said, Johnny Manziel does come from money. And, you know, it's kind of maybe the opposite. And it reminds me of that story that's been floating through the news lately of the teenage boy with the affluenza syndrome.
That one makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, he's inferring that Johnny Manziel may be on his way there. We never know. I mean, domestic disturbance charges, the cops are now getting involved, and you know you're not doing things right. Like I said, number one, when you get ousted from Cleveland. But number two, the Cowboys are saying they will not bring him on as a backup for Tony Romo. And, wow, that's a big drop.
You know, guys, speaking of trust issues, look at what happened to Louisville here. They announced a one-year ban on the postseason amid the investigation with the recruiting scandal of the escorts basically becoming true. Those two players are not on the team, and they actually imposed this ban this year on this team so they would not actually kill the program and lose future recruits. Is basically what they
right,
did. They decided to be proactive instead of doing it after the season and going to the postseason. They did it this season saying, let's just, guys, stay here. We'll have the same team next year. We're going to get all our recruits next year. So they're done this year. They have a great team, but they're not going to they're not going to be in the tournament. I think it's a great move by the school. It's a little on the slimy side. But they're really protecting the program.
Well, but see, there you're hitting the program right on the nail on the head, right? Because you have a program that says, well, we're going to impose a self 1-year ban because of this stuff. Well, what does that really mean? I mean, you're the ones who violated the thing. I mean, you're the ones who didn't do what you're supposed to do. So now we're supposed to think that you're taking control of things. Well, no, you're the one that was in charge of things. And I think this is kind of a ploy by the athletic director and Rick Pitino to say, okay, you know, we admit we were wrong. We're going to go ahead and take the punishment for it. And, just don't get too harsh on us. I think they're going to get a rude awakening. I think the NCAA is going to come down hard on them, take a lot of scholarships away, avoid a lot of wins. And, you know, when there's so many one-and-done players these days, I feel bad for the Louisville players who didn't get special treatment because now they've lost their chance to play in any kind of a tournament, and they may either be declaring or leaving football or basketball after just this 1 year.
Yeah, I think this. I agree with both of you. I think this is Louisville's attempt to brush things under the rug and, you know, try to move past what's really coming to them. And Mark brings up a great point. I really think you've seen it before, you know, with the Reggie Bush thing. So many, you know, student athletes have to pay the price for their predecessors. And I really think the NCAA needs to come up with a more creative way to, whether it's punishing the school directly or it just doesn't seem fair to the current athletes that have to pay the price for their predecessors.
Yeah, it seems like you should maybe offer students the ability to transfer schools with no wait period or no punishment period and be like, okay, your program was found guilty of doing things. If you want to switch schools, you know, where you can go play for something, you're welcome to do so. Or if you want to stay with your school, you can. But maybe give them an extra year of eligibility because that year can be used for anything, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You know, I mean, as I said, you know, you saw it with the USC program. You saw it with the Penn State program, Miami in the 90s. So, yeah, it's something that needs to be addressed.
You know what? That happened here at home with the Colorado Buffaloes. You guys remember that scandal we had here?
Oh, yeah.
That was when I was going to school there. Now, who was the coach? Did anybody remember? Was it Barnett?
Gary Barnett.
Yeah. Yep. It was Gary Barnett. I actually charged him a beer one time when they had free Coors Light. I said, Mr. Barnett, you're paying $3.25 for that. that's my Gary Barnett story. I charged them a beer instead of giving it to him for free. I hated the guy. He beat my Penn State team when he was at Northwestern in Happy Valley. So I was like, you're paying for that beer. Guys, let's move on to Coach
Ryan. I think we need to – this is one of those things where if we're going to be realistic about how life is and what reality is, this is how all programs work. Let's not fool ourselves. All the major basketball and all the major football programs, for the most part, I know it's not 100%, but, you know, even the ones who run a clean program, like, I'm pretty sure that Nick Saban, he is so cut and dry, he is so no-nonsense, I'm guessing that Nick Saban doesn't approve many, many under-the-table type things, right? But I still think even in Alabama, I'll bet you the boosters can go up to a player and say, look, you know, we're not in the school right now. Don't ever talk about this. Don't ever say anything. Just wanted to say hi. Glad that you came to play for us. And, you know, give him a handshake. And in that handshake, there's a wad of $1,000, you know, wadded up in the palm or something. You know, we've got to be realistic about what's happening. And when people get caught, that's when it becomes a big hoopla. But just because one person gets caught doesn't mean the rest aren't guilty. So,
yes. You
know, let's just be realistic and just go with it from there, you know?
Yeah, you bring up a great point, Mark. You know, with the boosters, there's no deterrent for them, you know, other than, you know, okay, if they get caught, their team may be out of the playoffs or you know, postseason play for a couple of years. But, you know, what's to keep them from, you know, doing these transactions? I really think
there's nothing illegal about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is they really need to maybe look into that and set up some sort of deterrent for these alumni or boosters that are causing a major problem here. So
yeah. Well, now, JP, I want to bring this up to you because I know that you love – I know that you're not a big fan of LeBron, and we've seen Kobe having a real hot little resurgence here. And I am not a Kobe fan, so I'm curious how you feel about it.
I'm a Kobe fan, man. He's from Upper Marion, right outside of Philadelphia. I watched him on a kids talk show once. The Black Mamba, I'll tell you where he got that name. Stephen A. Smith gave him that name, the Mamba. You know, Kobe has just had a resurgence here in the last week or 2 weeks. On the 31st of January, he went for 23 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. On the 2nd of February, he shot for 38. On Thursday night, he went for 27. The Black Mamba is just scoring some points. I mean, he's making a statement right before the All-Star game. And, you know, you like to see him.
Well, that Black Mamba name, I can't get into that because it just makes me think of Kill Bill and, you know, the Black Mamba in that episode, in that show. That was where I heard that name first, and then all of a sudden he was being called Black Mamba. And, I'm glad that Kobe is coming around a little bit. I mean, I can't stand Kobe because I still think of him as unbelievably selfish player who could have had a dynasty of unbelievable proportions with Shaquille O'Neal and Robert Horry and Derek Fisher and everyone in L.A. And he
understands
his
that
own
now.
Team.
Yeah,
I don't care.
He understands.
Who cares?
He's really good. He's really good friends with Shaq.
But that doesn't matter. That reminds me of the person who was a terrible human being their whole life. And then right when I look at death's door, suddenly realize their own mortality and say, oh, I'm a born-again Christian, everything's okay. You know, it's like, no, that's not how it works. You don't get to be a horrible person and then suddenly have contrition.
Now, Kobe said in an interview when he announced that he was going to be retiring right before they played the 76ers, he said in an interview, now Kobe's basically 40, he said that, you know, he did that interview in 3 different languages, Italian, Spanish, and English. He's looking forward to the rest of everything because he's like, I met Christian Dior once, and Christian Dior said to me, I didn't discover who I was. I didn't discover Christian Dior until I was 41. So Kobe's looking forward to everything coming after the NBA, unlike a lot of the NBA people are. Kobe is actually embracing the fact that he's retiring now and is going to go out there, and who knows? He wants to write. He wants to do this. He wants to do a lot of things.
I know.
Yeah,
I know he's a very intelligent guy, and he's got lots of talent. And I'm sure he'll be a great commentator if he wants to be. And you're right. He's worldly. I mean, he's traveled a lot, especially as a child, learned all the languages. Very sharp guy. There's no question about that. We knew that the first day in the NBA, and he was extremely intelligent. But I just don't like the arrogance that he showed. And I understand he's changed. He's been much better. And I know that his teammates from his three-peat with Paul Gasol and that group, they all praised him about being a great teammate and a great, leader and all that kind of thing. Again, I'm just saying, you think about what you destroyed, and can you make up for what you destroyed by what you create? And I don't know if you can. I mean, it's up for everyone else to determine. And I do just want to throw in also how depressing it is that both Peyton Manning and Kobe Bryant are now getting ready to retire. These are the final swan songs. And people talk about how old they are, how decrepit they are, how they're falling apart. And, boy, it's scary to think that we're all the same age.
Yeah, we really are. And, you know, Mark, I want to point out to you one thing about LeBrick, LeChoke, LeJoke, LeCramp, LeFraud. I have nothing against the guy. I think he's a great guy. I just don't like the way he made the decision. That's the big thing that I have against him.
I understand that. That was
LeBron is – I think LeBron has learned from that. But one thing you can say about Kobe, I think, is, you know, you either like him or you don't, but he really has that unrivaled competitive fire that you saw with Michael Jordan and Tiger in his prime that really you just don't see anymore. You know, there's just very few guys that have that, you know, that look in their eye where they're just, you know they're going to go out and win. It's just
it makes you wonder,
you have to appreciate.
You look at Curry out in Golden State, right? And when I go home to visit for the holidays and stuff, I get exposed to a lot of Golden State. It is all over the media out in California. And for good reason. The team is amazing. And Curry does crazy practicing. I mean, the things he does in terms of, like, dribbling two or three basketballs at the same time while running drills, I mean, just crazy things that he does. But it doesn't look the same. You're right. Because he doesn't have that look. And he's an amazing player, and I could see a lot of titles coming to that guy's, going to be in that guy's cabinet. But you don't feel the same intensity that you felt, like you said, with Jordan or Kobe, or you go to the NFL, Jerry Rice, or I'm trying to think of a running back that kind of slipped in my mind, but, you know, where they've got that, you know, like you said, that look in the eye where you're like, I don't want to get in their way because they're going to just bowl me over and just crush me. And I don't know why people don't have that as much anymore, but it might just be that there's more options now, right? Because it used to be if you were poor, sports was your only outlet. But now you can get a cell phone with all sorts of gizmos on it for $35, you know?
Yeah, you know, one analogy that comes to mind for me, guys, is, you know, if you look back to the 50s and the 60s and, you know, management, it was always lead by fear, you know? You know, if you aren't going to do your job, we're going to fire you and find somebody else. And now in this day and age, it's moved into empowerment and, you know, enabling and, you know, helping your coworkers do their job correctly. And I think you've seen that transformation in sports as well, you know, with, you know, Kobe and Michael, you know, not necessarily leading by fear, but just really taking the stage and being that, you know, that egotistical athlete and that, you know, that fire in their eyes where now you see Golden State and you see Curry and it's like he's empowering his teammates. And I don't know. That's just one thing that comes to mind for me.
So guys, let's take. I think we're going to take our final break of the show here and get into what the big topic is: the Super Bowl 50 preview. So I want to thank EKFit.net and SageMediaLLC.com for being our sponsors. You're listening to the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Up next, the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We are back on the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. We're coming to you live from the Veranda High Point Apartment Complex here in beautiful South Denver. We have on the phone line my co-host, as always, Mr. West Coast himself, Mark Furey, and a special guest today, the South Dakota boy, Mr. Nate Dogg. Guys, I just wanted to redo the intro there. I don't know if we got it on. We had technical problems. For all of you that have joined us at the beginning of the show, we had a complete system failure right at the 10-second mark, basically, and I do not know what happened. I will definitely get on the phone and blog talk. But, guys, let's go into the big discussion right now, Super Bowl 50, our Denver Broncos versus the Carolina Panthers. Mark, take it away.
And so I do want to just throw out a couple of updates that I've received just in the last few minutes. Now, before we get into the Super Bowl, though, Tannehill, I just think it's important to bring up that Tannehill has now over, you know, Ryan Tannehill, Miami has not really blossomed the way that people had hoped. And we were talking about offensive lines earlier. He has had 45 sacks in 2015 and 184 over the four-year career, the most in the NFL. So, again, we're finding out how important offensive lines are, and that's going to bleed right into the Super Bowl. I mean, the Broncos, if they can block and open up running lanes for Ronnie Hillman and C.J. Anderson, Peyton Manning becomes a dangerous weapon again, even though he throws a flutter ball. And for the Carolina Panthers, if they can block and keep Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, Derek Wolfe, and Malik from getting through the line and putting pressure on Cam Newton, then the Panthers are going to roll. So we're going to see how important that stuff is. The other quick updates are Jared Allen is going to start. He is going to play.
Yes, he is.
The linebacker that broke his hand or his arm, Thomas Davis, going to play. Emmanuel Sanders will not match up with Josh Norman, which that's interesting. I guess they decided they're going to take Demaryius Thomas out of the game, even though Demaryius hasn't really done much lately.
Is there still an APB out on Wes Welker from the last Super Bowl? Is there still an APB out on him?
he just disappeared like a stone, didn't he? Oh, that was just odd. But, you know, let's go conventional wisdom here, folks. I mean, I'm not asking you for your prediction yet, but I think we all know what the consensus is, and what I'm feeling, what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing outside of the Denver area is the Broncos are completely outmatched and they're going to get destroyed. Is that what you guys are hearing as well?
Yeah, I feel like all the talking heads on ESPN and Fox Sports are pretty much dismissing the Broncos. So, you know, that 18-1 record or 17-1 record that the Panthers are carrying in, and you know, they're the better team, and that's all I'm hearing. And I feel like no one's given the Broncos a chance.
Well, here's the stat that I actually found really interesting. I didn't realize this. Now, we know that Carolina has the number one offense. They scored 500 points. They have the number six defense. They've given up 308 points. Now, we know Denver has the number 19th offense overall, scoring 355 points. They gave up 296 points. That's a 12-point differential. That shows you how much better the Carolina defense is than people give them credit for.
But, I mean, I think you've got to also look at who they play and who the matchups are, because I don't really feel like Carolina faced a lot of really stiff competition. Not that they didn't face any, but they had a very weak division, and I know that the AFC West was not a juggernaut, but they did have the Chiefs and the improved Raiders team. But, I mean, Carolina, other than when they beat – I mean, they beat Seattle and Arizona back-to-back in the playoffs, which was impressive.
Well, they beat the Packers during the regular season.
Okay, so that's not bad then. So they did beat some good teams. You know, I guess we'll see what's going forward. I know with the Broncos, everyone said you can't beat the undefeated Packers, and they rolled them. But you can't beat the undefeated Patriots, and they put up an amazing comeback and beat them. They said you're not going to be able to beat Cincinnati and get that number one seed, and they did. And then they said, you no way in hell in the playoffs can you beat Tom Brady, you know, a second time. And they made that offense look meek. So can the Broncos defense make Carolina look that meek? Because we know the Broncos are not scoring. I can't believe they're number 19. I would have thought they were number 30.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you bring that up, Mark. It seems like those teams all had some sort of Broncos hangover. As soon as the Broncos beat them, they kind of went into a tailspin. Now, you looked at the Packers game first, and, boy, they really went downhill for, you know, a 3-4-game stretch there. And, and the Patriots, you know, after they lost with Brock Osweiler at the helm for the Broncos, they went into a tailspin. And then Cincinnati, you know, losing to the Broncos, they didn't finish strong. And then, you know, the crazy game in the playoffs, they lost. But,
they should have been interesting, let's be honest.
it is interesting that the Broncos have been able to expose a lot of weaknesses on these teams with their defense, and you know, a lot of other teams picked up on it.
Well, we're going to see what's his name, their defensive coordinator. I can't believe I can't think of his name right now. But you know, he came over and you know, after being with
Wade Phillips.
Yeah, Wade Phillips. You know, they talk a lot about how his defensive schemes are actually very simple, and that he gives his players a lot less to think about than most defensive coordinators. It's like, this is your job on this play. Don't think about anything else. Get to the quarterback, get to the quarterback, get to the quarterback. Or, you know, cover this zone, cover this zone, cover this zone. And I think what he's done is he's found ways to expose the holes of different offenses, all of which pretty much don't have great offensive lines. And he's found a way to make I think he's exposed holes that then other teams are watching, and that's why teams seem to go into a tailspin after they play the Broncos. And I think that I actually am glad that I am hearing the exact same talk about Carolina as I was hearing about the Packers and the Bengals and the Patriots, that the Broncos are just going to get walloped, because I think that means that they're not thinking about it right. I think that they're not going to be prepared for it right. And I think we're going to see a really close, hard-fought game. At least I'm hoping for it.
Well, you know, Wade Phillips plays a base 3-4 defense, which you can do a lot more out of the 3-4 than the 4-3, in my opinion. So he can bring those guys off the end. Now, the problem here is basically, let's look at the matchup of Cam Newton. Cam Newton is 6'5", 245. The Broncos' starting linebackers, DeMarcus Ware, 6'4", 258. Brandon Marshall, 6'1", 250. Von Miller, 6'3", 250. Danny Trevathan, 6'1", 240. I'll tell you what, Cam's as big as those guys, and you know he's faster. So if they want to rush up the sides like they did on Brady, it ain't going to work, because Cam's going to run right up the middle on you. So Wade Phillips is going to come up with a really brilliant defensive scheme in my mind. This game is going to be won on the defensive end of the ball. I think we all know that. If the Broncos are to win this game, it's going to be won with the defense.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Mark and JP. Mark, I think you'll laugh about this, but it brings up the days of Madden football for me. You know, I feel like the Broncos are going to have to run some sort of man QB spy. You know, you remember the days of, like, how dominant Michael Vick was in that game. And the only way to stop him was to have that fast middle linebacker mirroring him. And I think the Broncos are going to have to figure out a way for whether it's Danny Trevathan or Brandon Marshall to sort of mirror Cam Newton. I mean, they're going to have to account for him on every play.
Okay,
you know,
so
he's a threat.
Timeout. All right, so Nate, we bring you on the show, and I already get a Madden NFL EA Sports PlayStation game reference. Mark, can you go ahead and just give me a Star Wars reference off the bat? Because am I going to wait?
Hey, may the Force be with you. What can I say? If you haven't seen the movie yet, you know, I feel bad for you, because, boy, it's a hell of a new movie, and, you know, the Star Wars is back. But, you know, you bring up about the – you know, the containing Cam Newton. Now, Cam Newton doesn't have the lightning speed of a Michael Vick or those types. Now, it's certainly a great runner, but I think the Broncos are probably going to somewhat mirror what the Falcons did when they beat the Panthers, and that was, I mean, the Broncos have amazing coverage people in the secondary, especially considering they have both, they're going to have Tlaib and Harris on the outside. And then up the middle, they're going to have Stewart and Ward. And I think they're going to do the same. They're going to do that cover three, where they're going to have each of the corners cover their outside zones to keep getting stuff from getting behind them. They're going to have one safety back. But I think that they're going to run up the middle. I think they're going to have Wolf and Malik are going to be pushing hard up the middle. They're going to have big games like they did last week. Very important. And then they're going to bring DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller from the sides at the same time, because – that line in Carolina is susceptible to sacks. Cam Newton has been sacked a lot because they're not a very good pass-blocking team. He's a quick passer. He's like Manning. Gets the ball out quickly, and if he doesn't, then it's when he starts running. So I think the whole thing is, if Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, and Wolf can get penetration, Broncos win the game, and they control the game the whole way. I mean, we've all seen that the Panthers have trouble closing games out in the second half. So if the Broncos are ahead or close at halftime, I think Carolina's in trouble.
Here's another point. You know, I think the Broncos, for the Broncos, besides the defense, they need to get 30-plus rushes, and they need at least 140 rushing yards to be in the game. I'm going to throw that stat right out there right now.
Yep. If they hit that many rushes, it means the game is working and they're running clock. And that's, you know, I'm not even sure if not both teams want that. I think both teams may want to run the clock, and we may have one of the faster Super Bowls we've ever had.
Yeah, you know, you both bring up a good point. You know, Mark, I think Derek Wolfe is the key figure to the Broncos defense in this game. You know, obviously Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware are fantastic edge rushers, but really the pressure up the middle is what's going to be the difference maker in this game. If Derek Wolfe and Malik Jackson can get pressure up the middle and, you know, force Cam into turnovers or throwing the football before he wants to, I really think that's going to be the difference, because as we know, the cornerbacks and the safeties are, you know, exceptional, and they're going to lock down those receivers. And you know, that comes to mind for me, the difference maker other than Cam Newton for the Panthers is going to be Greg Olsen. I think you know him over the middle. I think if the Broncos lose sight of Greg Olsen, that could be a big problem.
Well, we know that. We know that a tight end over the middle is a dangerous thing if they're a good receiver. And the Broncos, you know, kind of the MO against Peyton Manning and the Broncos lately has been take away the middle, give them the outside, and try and catch an interception if the ball flutters. And I'm sure that's going to be kind of what the Panthers are looking to do here. The Panthers are more of a cohesive defensive unit. The Broncos have a lot of amazing players on defense that do their jobs, and that's why they've been so dominant. The Panthers don't have nearly as many great players, although they do have some, of course, with, you know, Coochie and Norman and things like that. But I think they're more of a team-based timing defensive unit. So if the Broncos can find a way to kind of mess up their defensive timing the way that you try to mess up Tom Brady and his offensive timing to stop that offense, then that's how the Broncos can have success. Now, it brings to mind the fact that they're now stating that Josh Norman is going to cover Demaryius Thomas. And I think that's a very interesting call, because Demaryius, in my mind, has almost been invisible in the playoffs. Why do you think they're doing that?
Well, they could be saying that just to throw them off. Maybe they're not going to do it. You know, they could say that just to try to make the Broncos game plan against them. They could be Shanahan pulling the Shanahan on the Shanahan or something. You never know, you know. Hey, we're going to step aside 10 seconds for station identification, and we'll be right back on the Sports Offensive.
Hi, this is Ashley from Twin Peaks Arapaho, and you're listening to the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark on the blogtalkradio.com.
All right, guys, so let's get back into that point. I mean, could they just be pulling another, you know, we call it doing a Belichick, doing a Shanahan. I mean, could they just be throwing that out there just to try to make the Broncos try to prepare a little bit differently?
Absolutely.
I don't think so. It's too late. If the game is tomorrow. This doesn't come out until today. They're not changing schemes. You're not going to – Kubiak's not that type. He's not going to panic like that. But I think maybe the thought is just Demaryius Thomas, even though he's not had the impact that Emmanuel Sanders has had, he didn't have a terrible year. I mean, he had 1,300 yards and 6 touchdowns or something like that. But, I mean, Demaryius has really disappeared. He doesn't seem like he's a big factor in the end of the season, the second half of the season, or the playoffs. What do you think happened to him? Is it all his mom?
That's a great question, Mark. You know, Demaryius has quietly had a pretty good season. I'm pretty sure he's caught 100 balls and for 1,300 yards.
Right, he went 105 receptions, 1,304 yards, and 6 touchdowns.
So, I mean, the touchdown numbers are down, but, you know, the rest, everything else, I guess he's just had such high expectations. But, you know, if you look at the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, I know the Broncos got killed, but Demaryius, I think he had 20 catches in that game. So I have a feeling this could be the Demaryius Thomas coming out party. That being said, I do think the Panthers are going to mask as much as they can what they're going to do in this game. you don't see a lot of man from the Panthers, to be honest. And I think Josh Norman's going to find himself covering all the receivers. You know, he'll be on Emmanuel. He'll be on, you know, Demarius, and even, you know, maybe some of the other guys, depending on the formation for the Broncos. You know, it's going to be probably 50% man and 50% zone, which has kind of been their numbers for the season.
Do you think Owen Daniels jumps out of nowhere again and catches a couple touchdown balls because they're worried about the receivers?
Yes,
I do.
It could be, but I'm worried about, you know, is it Luke Kuechly? Is that how you say his name?
Kuechly.
Boy, Kuechly, he scares me.
Kuechly. Kuechly. Something along those lines.
No one said
we were scholars of any kind.
but going back to Demarius, here's what worries me. Now, he did have his normal year, right? I mean, like you said, he's got 100 receptions, 1,300 yards. It's a good year. But, you know, after the Bears game, he didn't really do anything. I mean, he had one catch against the Patriots. He had 60 yards against the Chargers, 60 against the Steelers, 60 yards against the Bengals. Then he had a nice game against the Chargers, who have absolutely no defense whatsoever. Then we go to the playoffs. Against the Steelers, 4 catches, 40 yards, no touchdown. Against the Patriots, 2 catches for 12 yards. I don't remember exactly what day it was that his mom got out of prison, but, boy, it seems like it coincided with his, you know, kind of just drop-off. And I wonder if she's in his head. And, I you know, that's we need him. Or I shouldn't say we. The Broncos need Demarius Thomas in the Super Bowl. He has to show up. If he doesn't show up, the Broncos are going to be in trouble.
No, I agree, Mark. And you know, it begs the question, how much of it is Demarius? I mean, you know, there are guys that throw him the football. You know, Peyton Manning obviously has declined with his skill set. And, you know, Brock, even the games that Brock came in and played well, you know, you still see Demarius's numbers are down some. You know, so, I mean, maybe it's not all Demarius, but the other thing I've noticed with Demarius Thomas through the last couple of years watching the Broncos is that he really doesn't have that competitive fire that we've talked about, or at least he doesn't show it like with Kobe and Tiger Woods. You know, he's got a quiet demeanor. You know, if you've seen him in interviews and stuff, I think he's a really nice kid. But, you know, I think we need to see more heart and more fire coming from Demarius in this game.
No, I agree with you 100% on that one. He's got to show up. You know, he can't be silent like he's been the past two games. I mean, he's got to show up in this game. If he doesn't show up, they're in a lot of trouble.
I mean, because what else are you going to do? I mean, this is your big play receiver. This is your big money player, and he doesn't display that ferocity, that intensity. He's got amazing talent, and I think that's that he's survived on. And he's a good kid. He doesn't get in trouble. He's you know, a big volunteer in the community, and he's well loved in the area. There's no question about that. But you know, if you can't step up in the big moments, what do they always say about a great player? Right? You don't have to be great all the time. You have to be great when it matters. And, you know, you go back to a Montana, to a Rice, to a Tom Brady, to a Ben Roethlisberger, to, you know, a Jerome Bettis, to, you know, whoever. They're, when the big, big, big moments shown, you know, they stepped up. Something that actually Aaron Rodgers hasn't quite done. But switching over to the Panthers offense, there isn't a specific guy you need to stop. You can't look at that team and say, I got to stop this receiver. I got to stop this running back. Of course, you got to stop the quarterback, right? But that's true with every team. How do you approach stopping an offense that doesn't rely on any one player?
Well, I think you saw it the best with, you know, they didn't finish against Seattle. You know, they went into cruise control. They didn't finish against the Giants. But I think you saw the complete game against Arizona, and I was the only one that came out with the biggest point spread on that with a Panther victory. You guys, you and Dan both thought it was going to be a closer game. I said it was more of a blowout.
Well, I sure did.
They put the Cardinals away. I thought going into that game, the Cardinals were the better team. I thought the Cardinals were actually the best team in football at that point. They had speed at the receivers. They had Larry Fitzgerald. They had that rookie running back. And I guess there's a reason Carson Palmer has only won one playoff game in his whole career, and that was against Green Bay the week before.
What the hell happened to him? That was amazing. I mean, what, did he have six interceptions? It was like every pass was a horrible pass.
I think that brings up a good point, guys, that turnover margin has been the story of the season for the Panthers. Yeah. I'm not sure if they led the league, but they were near the top.
Did.
And
they were first in the league in turnovers, and the Broncos were tied for eighth.
Yeah, so
Carolina had to be close to first in points off turnovers too, weren't they? I mean, that was that. How many times the Panthers turn the ball over in the opponent's area, right? And then they score.
Yeah, no, that's been the difference maker. You know, that's why do you think the Panthers have been scoring 35 points a game? You know, of course they take advantage of those turnovers, which is another piece, but just to have them, you know, and put themselves in that situation, I mean, that's been the difference. And I mean, you look at a team like the Cardinals, who I agree with JP. I think they had the best overall team at the end of the season, you know, offense, defense, special teams. And what the Panthers were able to do to them defensively. I mean, those turnovers have been the story. So that being said, I think looking at the Super Bowl, if the Broncos don't turn the ball over, they're going to give themselves a great chance to win the game. You know, they've really. And JP's already said it before, they really need to set everything up with that running game. And they've got to have, you know, CJ and Ronnie have got to have 25, 30 touches to give Peyton Manning a chance to be effective.
Well, CJ and Ronnie on the year, I mean, they did a pretty good average of splitting the workload. Ronnie had 207 carries for 863 yards and a 4.2 average. CJ had 152 carries for 720 yards and a 4.7 average. Hillman had 7 touchdowns. CJ had 5 touchdowns. So, I mean, they've split the load really well when they needed to, and I think they need to split this load really well, but I think they almost need, depending on where they are, what happens really on this field, I think CJ needs to step up more than Ronnie. CJ needs to prove that he's the bigger back. I mean, CJ's 5'8", 224. Ronnie's only 5'10", 195.
I agree. I think CJ is going to be the difference. And, you know, I think something that not a lot of people are talking about is that third running back, Juwan Thompson. And I think in the red zone, that's something the Broncos really need to consider is that bruising back, you know, and bringing him in to beat up the defense, especially late in the game.
That's exactly right. They got to attack that up defensive line, and they got to just push and push and push. And I think we're going to see really early if we're going to have a game or not. Because if the Broncos do the three and out dance that they did earlier in the season for a number of games where the first four or five possessions, it's three and out, three and out, three and out, three and out. So they're going to see that Denver defense get tired. And I don't care how good your defense is. If the defense is tired, the defense is going to get beat. So especially against a physical team and a fast team like the Panthers. So that first... You know, that first offensive series you have where it's scripted, right, is the first, like, 10 or 12 or 13 plays are scripted usually. And we've seen that work for the Broncos. They've scored on their first possession or an early possession in a good number of the last 10 games. So, you know, if they can do that, if the first drive we see Peyton Manning throwing well, his feet are feeling good, the reports out of the practices are that he looks good. And one of the people that said that was Peter King. And that's a nice thing to hear because he's the same one who predicted the Broncos were going to lose 45-17 to the Patriots. So to hear him giving props to the Broncos, I think that's a good sign for that team. But, you know, I think we're going to know early. I mean, if the Broncos can't move the ball, they can't move the ball.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be a defensive battle, I think, guys. You know, I think neither team is going to want to risk throwing it downfield, and they're going to want to play a safe game plan. I think JP mentioned it earlier, running that clock down and, you know, trying to run the football, playing that field position battle game. You know, no one's going to want to make a big mistake. So I think it is going to be a conservative game plan from both aspects. And in my opinion, I think you're going to see a defensive game for the ages. I really don't see any touchdowns being scored in this game unless there's a turnover in the red zone, which I think that may be the difference. I just don't see the, I just don't see either offense doing a whole lot.
No, I don't really either. I also think it's going to be very interesting. Now, of course, every time we say something like that, what do we see? End up seeing, you know, 45 to 42 games. So that'll probably happen. But one thing I'm really curious about is the fact that both Jared Allen and Thomas Davis are going to start. I don't know that they're really healthy enough to be playing. And but they, it's a Super Bowl, right? I mean, it's Jared Allen's first, you know, even going this deep in the playoff. And so they're not going to want to come out of that game. I wonder, does that hurt Carolina? Could we see that being a problem? Could we see those two guys not at 100% taking the spot of who could be playing at 100%? And can the Broncos attack that, especially if you have both Thomas Davis and Jared Allen on the same side? Maybe you attack that side. Maybe you keep going there. You know, I mean, that could be a place to exploit.
I agree.
They'd have to exploit that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see, even though they're both getting the start, I don't think you're going to see them playing the full game. I think both of them are going to be limited snaps. And, you know, typically Jared Allen has been a pass rusher in the past. So, you know, maybe on third down, you're going to see him in there. But I really do think the Panthers have to limit their play. Although with Thomas Davis, you know, it's an arm injury. He's still going to have his legs about him. And as a linebacker, you know, how much do you really need your arms other than to tackle, of course? But, but if he's out there defending the pass and such, I think he's going to be in the right place. But I do think you're going to see both of those guys on a limited snap count.
I think you're going to see quarter of injections, you know, and not be able to notice the pain until tomorrow.
Sure.
Let's look at the quarterback they're going to be facing in Peyton Manning, the man, the myth, the legend. Peyton, this is his 27th postseason game. He is 13 and 13 in postseason games. This is the sixth meeting of number one versus number one in the modern playoff era, number one seeds, I mean. The NFC has won 4 of 5 of those games. Peyton has accounted for 2 of the losses in that category.
Let's think about one thing real quick. You know, you think about the Ravens 2 years ago, they were not even close to the best team. I mean, they were maybe three years ago. They weren't even very good. I mean, they were an average team with a bad offensive line and a weak defense that gelled and came together because their stalwarts, their gray beards, their long in the tooth players were all getting ready to retire, and it was kind of like a send-off thing. And I think that it's being underplayed that you've got DeMarcus Ware, who probably will – I can very easily see him retiring if they win. Peyton Manning probably will retire if he wins. We got to go out right. This is the biggest game of our life. I mean, we might see Peyton Manning scrambling right up the middle. I mean, this is that game where we're going to see – a lot of selling out. And the Panthers, let's be honest, they have not been anywhere before. What's that?
Well, you're going to see everything thrown out there but the kitchen sink, and probably the kitchen sink.
Yeah, I would agree.
And the Panthers don't have any experience in terms of the playoffs, really. I mean, they got beat by Seattle, I think, in the first round last year, and then they didn't in their first game at Seattle, I guess. But I don't think they even made the playoffs for the most part or didn't win any playoff games before that. And so, I mean, the Super Bowl's a different animal. You know, you see that. When teams get to the Super Bowl, sometimes they're not ready for that stage. A lot of it has to do with the coach, and Rivera's been there. So, I mean, he might have them prepared, but you can see the butterflies.
I want to bring up a really big point, being a college football fan. Cam Newton has played on the biggest stages in all of football. In all his high school career, his college career, he wants this spotlight. This is going to be an interesting game for Cam. He wants this spotlight. He doesn't shy away from it at all.
No, I agree. And the other question is, do the Panthers, are they so young and youthful that they don't know how big a stage it is? You know, and that could that be something that's to their advantage? You know, I mean,
it makes you think about Seattle, right?
Absolutely. On one hand, I mean, they could come into the game like deer in headlights, but they may come in just reckless abandon, playing like they've played all year and not even have that thought in their head about it being the Super Bowl. And that could be to their advantage.
And it bleeds down to the leadership, right? So if the quarterback is controlled and calm and focused, the team might be that way. So, I think we're going to see a great game, and I think you very well could have nailed it, that it could be a low-scoring affair. We could be looking at a turnover field position battle in the first half, and then maybe some fireworks in the fourth quarter as one team makes a blunder. But I tell you what, I'm not even that surprised, or won't be that surprised, if we end up seeing a turnover in the special teams, and that's what decides the game. Somebody muffs a punt, somebody fumbles a kickoff return, and that, you know, those are the kind of turnovers that really can change the momentum of a game. And we're gonna have to see something like that, because both of these teams have lived off of what their defenses do.
100% correct on that thought. I mean, the defenses are just making this. We're going to step aside for 10 seconds real quick for station identification.
Hey, guys. This is Allie from Jim and Nick's off of Hamden and I-25, and you're listening to Sports Offensive with JP and Mark on blogtalkradio.com.
So let's get back into those defensive matchups. I mean, now let's look what is Peyton Manning facing here, really? I mean, you got Jared Allen. It's his 12th year in the league. He's injured. He's playing. We already pointed out, we think they have to get to a certain yards of rushing, certain amount of carries. What do we think Peyton has to put on the board here to get the W?
Well, I mean, we've already talked about how the fact that the run game is going to be critical, because right, that'll bring some defenders back down to the line, because when Peyton Manning is playing quarterback, for the most part, we see that the linebackers play off the line, because they know that he's not going to scramble very often, or if at all, and they want to take away the middle of the field. So if C.J. Anderson is able to, you know, to bump it up the middle and get 4 yards of carry, then we're going to start seeing second and short and third and short. Now, if you have second short and third and short, I think Peyton Manning can do it. I think he can dominate. I think that they can win that game. I also think that perhaps, and I don't know this will happen, but, you know, the Broncos abandoned the bubble screen. The Broncos abandoned the HB screen. The Broncos abandoned the pick plays because that was their forte when they had that massive year in 2014. And now they've kind of abandoned that because they said teams all picked up on it. Now, they haven't done that all year. All year they haven't done those stuff at all. I would like to see them reincorporate those things, because I don't think the Panthers are thinking about that right now.
Well, let me give you Peyton's numbers 2 weeks ago against the Patriots. He's 17-32 for 176 and 2 touchdowns. 2 touchdowns obviously came to Owen Daniels, which no one expected. I mean, if there was a prop bet in Vegas on that, somebody won huge. But
oh, there was.
Yeah, I mean, 176 yards. That's for Peyton. I mean, that's not a lot of yards.
Yeah, no. I mean, like I said before, guys, I think it's going to be a conservative game plan. Nobody wants to make the mistake. Head coaches
are the scary thing.
It's going to be the difference. I'll tell you right now, whatever team turns it over more is going to be in the losing bracket. I mean, it's that conservative game plan. So whoever can force, you know, whatever defense can force the other team out of that conservative, thought process is going to make the difference. But I think one thing that we haven't talked about, guys, is the special teams. I think if you look at the Broncos, their coverage teams have played outstanding the last
outstanding.
Two playoff games. I mean, Kayvon Webster was a force in that Patriots game. And
Cody Latimer, who has not been the receiver that anyone has hoped he's been, has been absolutely spectacular on special teams.
I agree. And on the flip side, you've got a weapon like Ted Ginn for the Panthers.
That's why
breakaway,
I saw the pop-ups in Vegas.
That breakaway speed is, it could be a difference maker. You know, I know he hasn't had a lot of big plays this year from on special teams, maybe one. But, you know, with that game-breaking speed, he could be a difference maker as well. So I think that's something, you know, that needs to be looked at, along with the veteran kickers. You know, McManus had a great year. And what do you have, 5 field goals in that Patriots game? And,
the crazy thing is that McManus missed a field goal every game for 5 games to close out the regular season. And so it's kind of nice to see that he's put it, you know, behind him. And, you know, I have another issue that I wonder if it'll have any effect or not. But, you know, there is a mile high effect, right? People talk about how against Pittsburgh and against New England that the games, you know, in the playoff and against the regular season against the Patriots, you know, the games were all in Denver. And you've got that mile high effect, right, where people are at altitude. And now they're going to be playing at sea level, which you would think would mean the Broncos, they're only going to be, I mean, what, like 6 days at sea level, so their blood's not going to have adjusted. They're going to have extra hemoglobin. Does that come into play? Do you see the Broncos have more energy than the Panthers do?
It's a great question. I agree, Mark. I think you are going to see that. You know, and the veteran presence as well with the Broncos. I do think you're going to see a little more gas in the tank in that fourth quarter, especially with Peyton Manning and DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller. And I do think that's going to make a difference. So, and that begs the question, you know, do you need to keep, you know, if you're the Panthers, you want to keep that defense on the field as long as you can. Those long, sustained drives are going to, you know, take the Broncos out of their game and will tire them out.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I mean, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, you did bring up a good point about coming down to sea level. There is a difference. You know, that's why the U.S. hockey team used to train in Colorado Springs at 6,000 feet. You know, there's a difference with training up at altitude. People train at altitude to go play at sea level to have an advantage. So, you know, that is a very good point.
Yeah, and we see that, you know, Mike, if you ever go down to sea level, we've all lived in Colorado for a number of years now. And you go back to sea level and you go, like when I went home for the holidays, sometimes it feels like I can have 5 or 6 drinks and I still don't feel anything because, you know, you're just talking so quickly. As opposed, you know, then you come back home and you have one shot and you're floored, you know. So I don't know how much.
Are you closing the bars down in California or what?
Never. I'm just talking about drinking. I'm just drinking at home. But, it is wine country, you know, so I'm drinking a lot of wine. And, but, you know, it's sometimes you get kind of carried away because it just doesn't affect you. Now, we're talking about supreme athletes here. So probably not as big a factor as we want to make it be. Not to mention the fact that on the sidelines, they're drinking oxygen, you know, they're inhaling oxygen tanks, you know. So I'm not that I really think that's going to make a big difference. But you never know. The rubber leg syndrome in the late fourth quarter and you're trying to break off that big run for a huge game to put the game away, you know, that can have a factor. Now, here's another question before we run out of time. Have there been any significant arrests on either team? I haven't really been paying attention to that. That used to be pretty common to find some guys in trouble for prostitution or drugs or something. I haven't noticed a lot of that.
One of the Broncos practice team's players got busted in a prostitution thing in San Jose. He already got sent home.
Oh, they did. Okay.
And then I can't remember the guy's name, but wasn't there somebody that
Williams
he on the
something?
Practice squad and he had to jump into a pile of leaves?
Yep.
He was trying to camouflage himself in the pile of leaves.
he got busted in the San Jose prostitution thing.
Oh, man.
Well, at least it's a practice squad player, so that shouldn't really affect the team that much. Although it's just stupid.
Sure.
Why are you doing anything like that on the Super Bowl week when you know they're out there looking for you? I mean, it's just, you know, getting drunk, getting the prostitutes, getting the whatever, you know, doing the cocaine or, you know, whatever it is. It's like it's 1 week, and it's the biggest game of the year, maybe your careers, even if you're not even starting, you know, still. I mean, practice squad players, do they get a Super Bowl ring if they win?
I think they do. They get a smaller one.
Yeah.
They get a
subsequent one.
You want your team to win.
Yeah,
it's like Stephen
A. remember.
Says, you gotta stay off the weed.
Which is hard for a Colorado player, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So was it Antonio Smith at the beginning of the season that had the allegations? I forget if it was sexual abuse or I can't remember what it was, but I think that eventually got blown over eventually. I think he got, whatever. I think it got dropped. The charges were dropped. But, I agree. You didn't see a lot of, problems with either team, which is a good point. You know, once Greg Hardy left the Panthers.
How about a little bit of a future speculation for Peyton Manning? So let's say Broncos win, Broncos lose. Peyton Manning decides he wants to play one more year. The Broncos say, well, we've got to give the money to Brock Osweiler because he's going to be our future QB. We've got to sign him. We can't afford Peyton Manning back at any price. So now the rumor is, there's two spots I think he could end up. Number one is with the Rams, now in L.A.
Yep.
Or the Browns. Now, I can't imagine Peyton Manning being willing to go to the Browns. I mean, why would you? Just, I mean, you're not going to go anywhere.
Peyton won't play for Jeff Fisher. I'll tell you that right now. I don't know how Jeff Fisher still has a head coaching job. The man's been to the playoffs six times in 21 years.
Because he was so good to start out with Tennessee. I still think the owner is the reason that his coaching legacy got tarnished. And then in St. Louis, I mean, let's be honest. If Sam Bradford doesn't go down two consecutive years with collarbone injuries or ACL injuries, and he has a starting quarterback, albeit not a great one, but at least a real legitimate starting quarterback, the Rams might be a lot further along than they are right now. I mean, he's built a good defense out there. They've never had a quarterback the entire time he's been there.
Guys, I have breaking news right now. Breaking news. I just saw this come across the ticker. Chip Kelly has traded the entire San Francisco organization, all the players away, for a corn dog. I had to pull that one off the ticker real quick. But hey, guys, we got about 2.5 minutes to go. Let's start getting into our Super Bowl predictions. We're going to let our guests go first. Nate, why don't you line it up here for us? Tell me what you got and why.
All right, guys. Well, as I spoke about before, I really do have a good feeling about the defensive battle for the ages here. I don't see any touchdowns other than maybe one at the end of the game off a turnover. I do think the Broncos have one more game in the tank, and Manning's going to come out and be effective enough, and I see that the Broncos take this game 16-9. And
ugly
score.
So I don't think it's going to be a real exciting game. I think it's going to be, pretty much field goal after field goal, and then I think at the very end the Broncos are going to get a turnover and take advantage.
Very interesting.
All right, Mark.
That would be a wild game.
We're at the minute and a half mark.
Well,
what do you got?
Well, I'm gonna get a lot of hatred for this. The way I see the game going is I think the Broncos score a touchdown on the first possession with a good scripted play. I think the defense starts out real strong and Carolina kind of flounders a little bit. I think we go into halftime with the Broncos at 10 and the Panthers at 7. In the second half, I think it's a problem. I think the Broncos are going to get caught at least once with 10 Ginn getting behind the defense and scoring a touchdown. And I think we're going to get into the fourth quarter, and I think the running game is going to start to take effect and wear down the Broncos defense a little too much. And I think the Broncos are going to keep it close, but I think that Cam Newton is going to show why he's an MVP, and I think the Broncos lose 28-24
for the Panthers. Okay, so it's my pick. I'm going to go against the complete norm here. I think we're going to have a very entertaining first half. I'm going to give you that much. I think the Broncos defense will be entertaining first half, but I think we're going to see why Superman is Superman. Cam Newton plays big on the biggest stages. I'm going against the norm on this one. I am going 41-24 Panthers. I am going for the
wow.
I'm going for the over. We got 10 seconds to go. We want to thank Nate for being on the show. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and our page, www.thesportsoffensive.com. That's all we have for today, folks. Thank you for listening to the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. We'll see you next week. All right, guys, we are.